and restaurant booth instead with Boner Boss and Friends.
Everyone else has an intro. Do you think we need an intro?
No, I like the way Border Boss starts. It's
cold.
Pops up out of nowhere, basically.
Yeah, it's just cold shit. So this week, I have an essential change to the Border Boss brand that I want to get off my chest. You know, real heads know that I have a particular addiction to Diet Pepsi. I've been drinking it in unsafe quantities for several decades. But after hitting a recent patch of digestive distress, I had to slow it down to a trickle and then even went, you know, full days without drinking Diet Pepsi. That's pretty novel for me. But recently there's mounting evidence that I might be into Diet Coke now. I've been trying it, put a little Diet Coke in my Diet Pepsi when I stop at the Speedway and get the 52 ouncer. I never hated it before, but I would never have chosen it. Do you have an allegiance to one or the other, Mike?
Oh yeah. I'm definitely Coke Zero number one, Diet Coke number two, Diet Pepsi number three.
You know what's messed up is that Coke Zero Cherry.
Really? I think it's really good. That's probably my favorite variation of
really?
Diet soda. Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, maybe this is the ticket out, because I don't know what makes Coke Zero different than Diet Coke. I don't know. I haven't done any research on it. I don't know if they're using stevia or splubida or badabadaba. But you know, like Coke Zero, it's a cool name. You know, I want to be on the cool side. I want to be doing cool shit. Diet Coke, that's old. That's 70s. Coke Zero. Mm-hmm. That's today. But the cherry, it just tastes, I don't know, it tastes like the can or it tastes like the bottle. It doesn't really taste like the soda to me. It's leaching. So that's going on. I just want people to be aware of it. You know, they can give me all the shit that they want. There's people have been giving me shit for years about the Pepsi thing. Did you know that Pepsi is like some hated stuff?
What regards?
Like, it's like when people talk about, they talk about Pepsi like you're shitting in your pants. Like, oh, you're a Pepsi drinker. Like you're an imbecile because you're on the underdog team. You know, it's not like I'm drinking RC. I'm drinking Pepsi. What's wrong with that? It's one of the two. Two choices.
I think Pepsi peaked in the 90s and now in the 2010s. I think you're like the lone Pepsi drinker. You and my mom, basically.
Me and your mom. We get together and share a Pepsi. And you know, right now there's those bottles that are out that have you know, Ray Charles and Michael Jackson on them. I think they taste better. I don't know if the king of pop and what is Ray Charles the king of anything? I don't know. But if you find the bottle that has the king of pop on it, open it up. Try it out. I think it's a little bit better than you know, what's widely available.
What about is it like the artisanal Pepsi they made that disappeared?
No, it's just regular Diet Pepsi, but it's like retro brand. It has the You Got the Right One logo on it.
Oh,
it's
got, yeah.
You know, it looks real 90s. Yeah. So I just wanted to let people know that I think we have one listener, maybe one listener and a wife, maybe zero listeners in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place called the Brat House, and maybe this isn't even special anymore because everything's disgusting now. You know, everything's gross. And you know, remember when the Heart Attack Cafe or the Heart Attack Grill was big news?
Yeah.
Because they were serving you know obesity foods, and now that's the thing is you go to these places and you get stump foods, and this place. I want someone to go there because the whole theme is that they serve like oversized German food, and they have a pretzel that's the size of like an actual car tire.
Jesus.
And they'll serve it to one person. You know, you don't have to have a doctor's note. You can go there and get one like a pretzel as large as a human thorax and just tear into it with cheese dip.
There's a place here that is one of the first places I saw. Like I watch a lot of restaurant food videos on YouTube just to map out where I want to go, and there's a restaurant here called Rizzo's, and they have a giant pretzel too, and I've wanted to go there since I moved there, but I keep forgetting. There
was a place in the mall here called World of Beer, and it's supposed to be kind of a craft beer joke, and they served a pretzel that was on, you know, it was on like a meat hook, and it was so pendulous that it kind of like sagged on the hook, you know, like it looked almost like the Ren and Stimpy guy drew it or something. Like it was just this distended sack of pretzel that was hanging off of a hook. And that thing was really delicious and really, really big. And, you know, it was only later on. And I wasn't really formally, you know, off the wagon back then. But when I got home and I looked it up and it was like a 3,000 calorie pretzel, I was a little off put by that number.
The one at Rizzo is pretty big. It's $20, but it's not.
$20.
Yeah. It's pretty large. They also have trash can nachos, which is the real reason I want to go. But I don't
Is trash can the recipe or the plate?
It's pretty much the plate. Like, they make them inside of, like, a cylindrical. It's more like a coffee can. It's, like, really like coffee can nachos. And then they, like, you know, take the coffee can away, and you have, like, a nice cylindrical tower of nachos. Oh, yeah.
Right. I think I've seen, I don't know if I've seen that, but I've seen things like that where they pull it away and all that. It kind of, like, oozes a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to go right for it. This week, Joël Robuchon. Are you familiar?
I don't think so.
R.I.P. Joël Robuchon. He is, you know, the top chef on earth. He's got, like, thousands of Michelin stars. And he's, like, we would know him because, you know, you and I are both big fans of the old Iron Chef. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he was a judge, but he was definitely, you know, at the beginning when Chairman Kaga would say, you know, like, the heart of tuna is watermelon and peanut butter. And he, you know, he'd make a quote or something like that. Yeah. And I think it was frequently Joël Robuchon, because he's just the man. Uh-huh. He's the guy who's been, you know, sapping up Michelin stars like he was Super Mario for the last several decades. And then he went into retirement, and then he came back. And how often did you visit L'Atelier when you lived in Brooklyn?
I never went there.
L'Atelier de Joël Robuchon. He came back. He came back, and everything you see right now is based on this. You know, when you go to a restaurant that is like steel stools around a rough, tall table, but everything you buy is $30.
Yeah.
I think that was him. He came back and he opened this place, and it was like a fast casual looking place. It looked like it was going to just be, you know, wings and pizza or whatever, but you could buy a $300 meal, like a literal $300 meal. And I don't know if it was good. I don't know if it was exciting. I don't know. I'm not that guy. I don't really know that kind of stuff. I've had, you know, fancy and expensive meals in my day, but I just don't really care. Have you ever actually gone to that kind of, like, if not that place, then have you gone to like a multi-hundred-dollar, dining experience or a gastronomic experience?
I've never done the whole like tasting menu thing where, yeah, they have like, you know, little plants that turn into beef. Like, I've never done mm-hmm. that, but I've been to some high-end restaurants, just haven't done that. There's one here, like the one of the more famous ones. It's a woman's name. I don't know why I always forget it, but they're the ones that do like the balloons, and they pop it and it turns into bubble gum and shit like that. But I don't have enough money to go there yet.
I'm saving up to
I think it's like $200 for the tasting menu.
I just don't know. I mean, it wouldn't kill me, but it would kill me. You know, it wasn't awesome.
Have you been to any high-end restaurants? Like, what's the highest-end restaurant you've ever been to?
I don't know. I used to work for a company where the guy, the main boss, was into eating out.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to, you know, New York City and eat at like a sort of fancy Italian place. But really a fancy Italian place? Like, what are they going to do? It's Italian food. I can make Italian food.
Yeah, I've always felt fancy Italian places are a scam. I agree.
Yeah, it's a total scam. You know, I think last week I told you about the best item I've ever eaten, which was the sesame ball.
Yeah.
The best meal I've ever eaten in my life was at an Easter buffet in Colony, New York. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it has a name. If anybody knows the name of this, borderbosseternal@gmail.com, borderbossRIP on Twitter and Instagram. It's some sort of really, really tender beef, like pot roast or something, on a bunch of like polenta. But polenta is gross. And this is better than gross. I don't know what the deal. It was really plain. It was as plain as I'm saying. It was like a really dark brown piece of melt in your mouth beef on top of a warm gooey bed of something, and it was outstanding. It was at a buffet, so I could have all I wanted, and I didn't have all I wanted because all I wanted would still be going on right now.
Yeah,
but I had a lot. And then when I went to this fancy Italian place down in New York City, which was, you know, like several hundred dollars to eat, and, you know, wine just kept coming.
Yeah.
They had something like it. Not even close. Not even close to this like Easter buffet that I went to in Colony, New York. So I went all the way down there, 3.5 hour trip. My boss spent who knows how much of discretionary funds. And that company's closed now, by the way. and their beef. Their beef on a pile of something was not nearly up to snuff. I think I've been to other places. It kind of comes and goes for me. I don't really, what I remember is the novelty of going to like Fatburger, you know?
Well, yeah, what I was getting at is I think, you know, you usually pay that much money because it's usually to the point where they're like the waiters, the waitstaff are like cleaning crumbs off of your table as they fall from your plate. So you're kind of paying for that too.
I don't like dressing up either. Like that would, that is, like that everything tastes like poison to me.
I would never go to a place where you would need to like literally dress up or you get kicked out because that's a scam. This is 2018.
Yeah. We're casual now.
Yeah, we're all casual.
Fast casual. speaking of fast cash, somebody's back on the scene that we're all happy to see. Mike, you've used this man's face artistically in the past, but I can't honestly say I know how you feel about him. That is Mr. Guy Fieri. Do you like Guy Fieri or do you like
I do like
find
him.
Humor in him?
I think, you know, to my pretentious artist side is I'm kind of attracted to do stuff with people that are kind of polarizing and annoying, but have like a weird charisma about them. And that's what attracts me. Like, that's what I want to like create art with. But I think Guy Fieri won me over after a while because like, you know, he looks like a dipshit, but
yeah.
And he kind of
is a dipshit.
He's a dipshit. Like, he kind of lucked into his jobs, basically. He's not like, you know, I mean, you could say most Food Network people have lucked into their job. But, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives has never steered me wrong, no matter what part of the country I'm in. So, just for that alone, I think he's great.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a clown, but I think he's probably a totally sweet guy. Like, the problem is that he hangs out with Sammy Hagar and Smash Mouth, and that makes him, like... Well, I mean, the problem is he wears the sunglasses on the back of his head. Those are all problems. Those are legitimate problems. I'm not going to sell that out. But, you know, there was the whole story where the guy broke into his house for the yellow Lamborghini. That was incredible.
The teen
broke into... broke into his look that up. I'm not gonna do that.
It was like a Max something. I can't remember his last name, but he like did like Mission Impossible shit where he like scaled down from the roof and stole Guy Fieri's Lamborghini.
Yeah, he stole like a yellow Lamborghini. Of course, a yellow Lamborghini. Yes. But like, you know, Guy Fieri, like of all the choices he had in the world, he's like, you know what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna shine a light on small businesses. And that's legit. Like, you know, like, say what you want about the rest of whatever he does with himself. He picked something that would benefit others. That's pretty neat. And right now, he's doing something that I think is a weird lateral maneuver that I think is, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's like, it's bizarre. Because he's opened a restaurant called Chicken Guy. Chicken Guy is like a fast casual, it's like a smash burger kind of place, but for chicken. And it's reasonable. And it's not really that heavily branded. You checked it out, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's like $6 or $7 sandwiches, a bunch of wacky sides. Everything's a little wacky, but it's not really like his face isn't on things. It's not really, it looks like he's just trying to become a Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
I really hope that we're at, and it's only at Disney World now.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to make a little bit of a trip. But he says he's going to open more of them. If he does, I'm kind of into this.
Yeah.
I kind of would like for him to have started off as this guy that people clowned on and made memes about, and then he becomes like the Mayor McCheese of 2040.
I was looking at this as more of like his retirement plan where he's like, look, I can't be Guy Fieri forever. I got to do this. Yeah. Plus, I think fast food fried chicken is like the easiest type of food that you can fake being good.
And, yeah, it's super cheap too.
And so, it's super cheap. So I think he has like a good chance of actually parlaying his wacky career into another career, basically.
It's probably pretty exhausting to be like him.
Yeah.
But the problem I have with this whole vertical, the whole whatever you call the step – I don't know if it's still fast casual at this point. The Shake Shack, the Smash Burger, like that level of fast food are all serving you Coke Freestyle for $3. $3 fucking. I can go to, you know – a Taco Bell and I can get like, it's like $1.50 or something like that. And I can drink soda for 3 days straight. They won't kick me out. There's a place in town called Burger Fi here. Burger Fi. I don't know what it is. Burger Fi. It's pretty good, but they give you like the free cup, you know, the free water cup.
Yeah.
They give you that for $3. I have to keep going back and keep going back for 7 or 8 trips. I have some very important Taco Bell news this week.
Talking Taco!
the news that relates to one of our acquaintances personally. Do you know if this made it past us? This is like a pretty big story, right?
Yeah, it was on the website for like the Cleveland like alternative paper, basically, like the rock and roll paper.
I think it made it beyond that. I think it actually made it to be kind of like, you know, like maybe not like Food Beast article or something like that, yeah. But I think it made it out there. So someone in Cleveland was selling what looked like a really pristine Taco Bell booth. It's really attractive. It's like the 90s, like three-person booth, the one that they just fit in the weird corner that has to be near like the condiment island or something like that. We have several friends that are in that region. So we tried really hard to get our friend number two, Brian. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brian. Brian sent me a whole bunch of buttons after the last episode, which is incredible. Some of them are fajita buttons. Who remembers the fajita? Only me. We tried to get him to buy it. And apparently he went over and put in this like a super weak offer.
Yeah.
Like this is like I would have just cut him a check. Just say yes and take it, man. He went and he like lowballed him. Like he offered him like the guy was asking $250, which seems pretty reasonable for this item. I think number two offered him like $12.
Yeah, $12.
And we, you and I, Border Boss Incorporated, we committed $29.
$29.
We offered to spot him $29, and he offered less than $29. Our discretionary money was at stake, and he said no.
Yeah.
So he lost out, and then we thought another person we might know have gotten it, but no. It turns out that this goes deeper than that. Somebody else that we know is the lucky owner. Kissing contests.
Yep.
Best. As far as I'm concerned, host. Zachariah.
Yeah, he got it.
Do you know anything about, do you know any of the goods?
No, it was weird because, yeah, all of our friends were like, oh, he might buy it. And yeah. I completely forgot Zachariah. And then one day I was just scrolling Instagram and I was like, oh shit, that's that Taco Bell booth. And I see his screen name. And I'm just like, son of a bitch. I should have known all along. I should have alerted him. But yeah, I'm going to be out there in a couple of weeks, so I'm hoping that I could contact him and maybe get some pictures with the old booth.
You got to really squish your ass into this seat because you're doing it for both of us. Like, I don't know if I'll ever get out there. I hope to get out there sometime, but you know, I don't really know Zachariah directly. I'm not going to make him let me in his house, but he should. Does he even know that you're part of a Taco Bell podcast? He didn't call you to tell you.
Yeah, no, I got to text him or something. I got to see. Maybe we can have him on as a guest one time to interview him about the booth.
It'd be a great guest. He's the guy, though. Like, I don't really know a lot about his life, but whatever he posts on Instagram, I don't know if those are collectibles or if he just goes to other people's houses and has a good eye for things to put on his feed. It's incredible. He has a really good eye for whatever you call whatever he does.
He doesn't have a good eye. I will also say, while I was moving to Chicago, I was packing my stuff and I found like this this flat, very big piece of cardboard, like two pieces of cardboard taped together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck is in here. And I forgot that he sent me a long time ago. He sent me like one of those movie theater sized posters for RoboCop Part 2 that I found. And it's like, wow. It's cool to fucking have, but I'm never going to be able to hang this anywhere. It's like the size of a fucking wall. But I have it though.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I have it, and that's all thanks to Zachariah. So yeah, he's a good junk finder, I guess.
Well, as a married man, that'll be your first divorce ready fight is where the RoboCop poster goes.
Yeah.
So you moved out of New York City at exactly the wrong time, because guess what's coming? 1,000 new Taco Bell restaurants are scheduled to open by 2022, and 1/3 of them are going to be cantinas, and like 90 of them are going to be in Brooklyn or something. Like, the article for this is incredible. They said that, like, Brooklyn, Chicago, a couple of places, they're just opening cantinas all over the place, but they're all in the same few cities. So you moved out of Brooklyn, you moved to Chicago where they have 90 cantinas. They're following you. Like, you're like whatever animal in the game Centipede leaves the mushrooms, that's you. You're leaving cantinas behind wherever you go. You finally landed in some place that has them. Yeah. So I need to know more about Chicago and the cantinas.
Okay, so I have a Taco Bell scene report for two Taco Bells. The first one is a cantina. It finally opened. It's across the street from my house. It's not technically across the street. It's more of a around the corner, but I wouldn't even count it that far, though.
Did you know it was going to be a cantina?
Yeah, I don't think they open. That's the thing with I think the initial article that came out about them being in Brooklyn, this was like last year, and it was like, yeah, Taco Bell doesn't really have any like visibility in urban areas, and I never really noticed that, but that's true. Right. And so I think they're just trying to phase out the normal Taco Bells in a lot of urban areas and just making them all cantinas. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, like I knew this one was gonna be a cantina because I was walking by when I think it was the first day I moved here. I was like walking down the street and I saw like a thing all boarded up and I saw the coming soon Taco Bell on the door, Taco Bell Cantina, and I was like, holy shit, this is a
and you could really smell the day. You could smell the brushed metal and the redwood and the rustic seats. You could smell it through the plywood, right? Like you knew it was gonna happen.
And then yesterday, it turns out was their first day open. They finally opened. It's a great day for me, probably not a good day for surviving and living. I'm probably going to die soon because I'm eating Taco Bell 7 times a week.
Across from your home?
Yeah, I know. Jesus. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's probably 500 feet away, I think. I think that's a safe estimate.
That's nothing. And I could walk 500 feet.
Yeah. And so I went there the first day, and it's like, as Scott said, it's the most rustic Taco Bell I've ever seen. A lot of wood. A lot of exposed brick. Exposed brick is also in the other cantina that's in Chicago. So that's no big deal. They don't have... The other Chicago cantina has an artisanal... I've discussed this on Border Boss before, but they have like an artisanal soda machine. This one just has the Pepsi version of the Pepsi Freestyle machine.
The Spire.
Pepsi not as good Spire. As the Coke one.
Wait. What?
Yeah, the Coke one has flavors that no one's ever heard of in their machine. Pepsi just has Pepsi products.
Do you like the Coke Freestyle machine?
I've only used it like once or twice in my life. Okay. It was okay. Like, I mean, I've never had, like, I got to make like cherry vanilla Coke Zero. So that was pretty crazy for me.
Yeah. That's not, but, like the so far the consensus, and this includes me, is that the Freestyle machine kind of sucks. Like, I don't know what they put in there for Coke, but it's not Coke. It's not Diet Coke. There's some sort of off brand. It fills your mouth with the sensation. like a pressure. If you buy like a Fanta or something weird like that, it's pretty cool. But if you buy the core Coke products, they're garbage at the Freestyle machine.
But yeah, this Taco Bell, it's super nice. They have a little chill out area in the front, which is weird for a Taco Bell. Like it's a bunch of seats and like two-seater seats, but no real table. So you're just like supposed to lounge around and have your beers and spiked slushies, whatever the fuck they call them there. It was the first day, so it was nice and clean, and there was 18 people working, and unfortunately, you can tell, I don't think they had a lot of people from other stores come in to help, because like I'm pretty sure this is the first day most of these people were working at Taco Bell.
First day they've ever worked.
The first day they've ever worked in their lives. It was just all 15-year-old kids. No, there was adults there, too. But so the Crunchwrap I got was not the best-made Crunchwrap. And, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. And I had a beer and, I had those naked chicken things for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they're $5.
Did you get wild sauce?
Yeah. Whatever the fuck it comes with. but yeah, they're $5. They need to make, I don't know if I just couldn't find it on the menu, but they need to make a non $5 serving of those chicken things.
Cause nothing should hit $5 mark until it like comes in a bowl.
But it's so many, too. Like, I was with my girlfriend, so luckily she ate some, too. But that's, like, beyond a snack. Like, it's more than six. You shouldn't have chicken, what is essentially chicken nuggets, in any bigger serving than six, unless you're having, like, a party.
Well, how many do they give you?
Dude, I don't know, but it's a lot. It's, like, 10 or 15. Probably 15.
Oh, man.
And, let's just make a five-piece box for $1 or $2. That's fine. But it was fine. They didn't have this at the other cantina either, but we asked one of the women that were working, and they tried to explain it, but it doesn't make any sense. But on the bottom of their beer cups, which is the plastic cup, they warn you like 18,000 times you can't bring this beer outside. Like, I think they're like afraid that Taco Bell in general, not just these women, but I think they're afraid that since it's a fast food place, people are going to think you can... just walk, like, you can get beer to go, which I understand that fair, because it makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, there's warnings all over the place, and they told us. And so I finished my beer, and at the bottom is, like, a little magnet on the bottom. Like, it looks like a thin refrigerator magnet. And I'm like, oh, man, I think, like, somebody's badge fell in my fucking drink. This is fucking disgusting.
Does it touch your liquid?
Yeah, dude. And so I like look at the bottom of the cup and there's like this weird metal contraption, like a saw trap contraption on it. And I'm just like, the fuck is going on? So I scrape the magnet off and like, you know, there's just a hole. After you take the magnet off, there's a hole. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? So we ask, and somehow it's some kind of thing that prevents people from taking the beer outside. But I don't know how that works, because I was like, well, I'm going to take the magnet. And she was like, you can take the magnet and the cup if you want. It's not going to work now. And I'm just like, maybe it goes by weight. Maybe if you walk out of the doors, like, the magnet senses it and, like, the cup explodes. Like, I don't know if it's, like, an ink cartridge inside the contraption at the bottom. But I didn't take the cup. I only took the magnet because I'm going to make a collection of them. But
yeah.
That I don't know, people out there, if you know about drink security, let me know if you know the science behind this. But either way, it was really clean Taco Bell. It's open to like, I think two or three, maybe, and on a weekdays or weekends. And I live in an area. I lived in New York a long time, and they don't have like college town type of partying out in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And Chicago has that type of partying where it's just a bunch of young people all congregate on one street in the city, and it happens to be the street that the Taco Bell is basically
on. They flip cars.
Yeah.
They take their shirts off.
And there's already, like, after, like, a Saturday night, if you walk around the street on Sunday morning, it just looks like 75,000 fast food places fucking exploded all over the place. And there aren't any here. So, like, now that there is one, I can't wait to see what that Taco Bell looks like at 2 in the morning. Because it's going to probably be pretty rowdy. I do think they cut off the drinking at, like, midnight, though. So, the next 2 hours, you just get to chill out, I guess, in Taco Bell.
Well, they cut off the drink purchasing, but you can keep getting refills on your beer until 3 a.m. Yeah.
It's also, I think it's hovering between $4 and $5 for a beer, which I guess is fair.
That's not, I mean, but what is it? What are you getting? Are you getting a Miller?
No, well, they have domestic, but the domestic is just, it's, I don't think the woman knew the name of it, so she just called it IPA. And I was like, she said, do you want IPA or Fat Tire? And I didn't look at the taps to see what they were. So the domestic beer is, you know, pretty much still quote-unquote craft beer, but I think it's those two fake brands that like Budweiser made. I think that's the deal. Right. So I think it's still like Budweiser or whatever. And then I think the Mexican beer is like Modelo, and I can't remember what the premium beer is, but they do have all like all the liquor they use is top shelf stuff, unless they dump out, well, not top shelf, but it's on a shelf. It's not like some generic store brand of liquor. So so at least they have that going for them.
It feels weird to trust Taco Bell employees with just a bottle of liquor. Like if they're just like straight mixologying it for you. Like, but I've been to Chipotle and they do that. Like they just keep a bottle of, I don't know, whatever that was back. It's something decent that they make their margaritas with and stuff. But your cantina didn't have the Beach Bell branded Taco Bell beer.
No, I don't.
That's the shit that I want to try, man. Like Taco Bell made its own beer, Beach Bell.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think either Taco Bell cantina. Maybe that's just exclusive to that first Taco Bell cantina.
I don't know. We gotta find one. Maybe someone will ship us a Beach Bell in a box.
So the second scene report is last episode. I talked about how there was a Taco Bell here, supposedly named the best Taco Bell in the country because of their service and whatever the fuck else. And there's a couple articles on the internet. Just search Best Taco Bell Chicago and you'll see them. And there's like, you go to the Yelp and it's the same thing. There's all like 4 and 5 star reviews about how fucking amazing it is. And after a while, you think it's maybe kind of a troll.
Yeah.
I asked some local friends and they said it was a really good Taco Bell. So I went there twice since last episode because another thing, not to get off on a tangent, but another thing that I've been doing is I got all these old recipe cards from the 80s and 70s. And I've started making the recipes on the cards, but we can get into that in another episode when I build up an army of recipes. But
good so far, by the way, though. Like follow, please follow Mike. Is it you or it's your personal account?
Yeah, right? It's MikeDikk on Instagram, all one word. MikeDikk.
You have to see what he made so far. It's it's something.
But so the grocery store I go to is right across the street from Taco Bell. So it's like. Mm-hmm. I work from home, so I leave the house to only go to Taco Bell basically now. So right. I'm gonna be real hot looking in like 6 months. I'm gonna be irresistible. I went there twice. The first time I went, and for whatever reason, I had the logic. I should get two things I've never ordered from Taco Bell, and that's how I would be a good judge. And that is the least best way to be a good judge of anything.
Yeah.
So I got the
Rosé Freeze and the Watermelon Freeze.
Yeah. I got a Power Bowl and I substituted a bunch of shit to stump them. I took out the rice and chicken and added some shit and blah 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 and you know made my own custom Power Bowl and I got a tostada, which is something that I forget.
I don't even know if they have those here.
Yeah, it's like it was on a dollar menu. I was like, fuck. And I used the app and everything. So this is the first time I used the app. And it was like a standard suburban Taco Bell, basically. That's the kind of experience it was.
Yeah.
And then I went there again today and I was like, I gotta get a Crunchwrap because that's like the thing I know the best. Like I can touch a Crunchwrap and sense if it's gonna be good or not. And I got that and it was like, it was all right. I would give it maybe a C+ altogether. So I don't know if when they were in their remodeling period, they lost all what made them special or what, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think it's a fake. If anybody out there has conflicting opinions, feel free to contact us.
If you go to borderboss.rip, there's not always a lot of reason to go there, but I've been trying to use it a little bit better to augment the episodes. We'll post the who wore it better.
Yeah.
Because Mike, you got that Cantina Bowl. That's what I usually get. I usually get a very custom, highly refined, for my machine of a body. My beautiful, sleek machine of a body requires a lot of protein. So I have them make me a real special Cantina Bowl. Yours wasn't far off, but it was, it looked like airplane food. It looked like they had done the work on some part of it and then said, oh shit, this is supposed to have lettuce too. And then just like dumped a lettuce gun, like a party cannon of lettuce over the top of it.
Yeah. It was really compartmentalized, basically. I don't know if that's how they're supposed to come, but nothing was mixed together. It was like a scoop of everything I ordered, and then they threw a bunch of lettuce on top of all those scoops. And it's good. Like it's a cool way to cool abstract sort of way to serve something that's supposed to be mixed together.
Yeah,
but I don't know if that's how it's supposed to come.
I think that's where they feel like they get to shine. Like they get to put together this little hungry man dinner for you. Because you made a bunch of customizations. They basically do the same thing for me, but any customization I make jeopardizes a standard item. So it's like the more I ask for, the closer I get to damnation, and they'll start forgetting the basics. So, whereas at least they remembered the lettuce on yours, they completely forgot the lettuce on mine. It's it's a fundamental part of the bowl, but I asked for this, I asked for that. So, I get a bowl and I have them hold all the carbs because I don't need carbs because I'm a machine, and I have them add a bunch of jalapeno peppers and beef and chicken, all the animals, land, sea, and air, and and it comes out pretty hearty. But if they forget the lettuce, that's all my roughage for the day. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, I'm not gonna digest anything all day long now unless I eat some stones. So mine mess me all up. It's delicious because it's just like a slurry of beef and jalapeno peppers. But I just told you I got GERD. I need more than that from this. I can't just walk out of that place without eating some leafy greens. But I don't think the things you showed me were picturesque. But I mean, were they delicious?
I don't know. The stuff I got today, I think that my takeaway is, they might be a very clean Taco Bell. I think that's like what their real claim to fame is where I can tell in the back there's not like a bunch of shit falling over into the different ingredient bins crust. And shit like that.
Yeah,
because everything is like, it is like, even the taco I got, which would have been one of the most perfect Taco Bell tacos I ever had, except the shell was cracked, so that ruined it. But it was like perfectly layered. Like there was no mingling. Maybe that's how the manager, their guy teaches them there, is not to fucking mix all this shit together. So it's well made, but it's still like, I don't know, it's just like, it's Taco Bell. It's not anything above and beyond to me, I don't think.
Speaking of perfect tacos, this is something I forgot about. One of the listeners, Dave, we have a lot of Daves. We have Death Metal Drive Through Dave. This is I don't think this is that one. This is a Dave that runs a label called Black Numbers. He sent me some information that the 2.9 perfect taco pin that I find over and over on eBay is evidence that person is a master of Excel spreadsheet taco construction. just as you're saying, the perfection of a taco is the 2.9. 2.9 ounces. And they have other measurements. Like there's other items, you know, standard items that you're supposed to know just in your heart, just with your hands, your fingers, and your heart. Just you dip your whole hand into the beef slurry and you pat it out onto a taco gently. And when you're done, what you have is a 2.9 ounce item. And there's scales all around the office. You're supposed to check your work every so often and see if you're still tight, if you're still the man at the 2.9. You're just supposed to be testing constantly, and you're supposed to be number one at 2.9. So, you know, I don't know if the number one Taco Bell in the country was on that, but thanks Dave for first clearing up that mystery. I want to know if there's other pins celebrating other pins like that. Also, I want to know if that's an award or if it's just like a fascist reminder.
We used to, when I worked at Friendly's, we had that test too, but with ice cream.
Were there things around that said like an angry Friendly's mascot looking down at you saying, remember 2.9 ice cream?
No, I don't think it was that serious, but we had to do it. Like I may have worked there 6 months total. We had to do it two or three times while I worked there. It was like once every couple months, and I never did it right. Like I can't remember what it was. It was something that equates like as a denominator of three, because it's three scoops in the sundae. I think it was like 9 ounces or 6 ounces, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. That's what it's supposed to be. And you're just supposed to know. And every time I would either take out the tiniest possible scoops I could or the biggest possible scoops I could. Because I was like, I'm not going to take it. I wasn't an adult, but I was like smart enough to be like, I'm not going to. The fuck is this going to do for my life? Like, like am I going to get a college scholarship because I could put out a 9 ounce sundae perfectly? So, you know, I just never took it seriously. So it's I'm
like
sure
you're like super excited if your friend at the bar can do the 5-finger filet, like he can actually move the knife around his hand. Yeah. You know, if someone just scoops you like a really well measured sundae.
Yeah. So, but maybe if I did, maybe if I passed it for like a year, I would have got a plaque or something. I don't know. I never, the whole time I worked at pizza, we had promotional pins, but I don't think we had any that, you know, displayed that we did something real good.
I have a friend who is a higher up at Stewart's, and he can't get me the chili dog Stewart's pin. last week we talked about eBay.
Yeah.
And we got some good feedback on the summer salad portion of the show so far. I'm glad you enjoyed something I didn't even realize was that bizarre when I was young. Like they only hit me while I was telling the story. I was like, wait, this is really weird. While we were searching for the eBay items, you and I, we were just chatting. We were swapping links back and forth. And some of the best stuff, it's nothing anyone else is going to really appreciate that much, but the sort of really 70s stuff was my favorite. There was like a contest entry form for a mini bike. And I know mini bikes are still out there. Like I know that, like probably even more so, but that's like a 70s thing.
Yeah.
Like
there's
not to
break you off, but there's kids here that ride some kind of weird mini bike thing like it is the 70s, and it's fucking weird.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, the idea of having a mini bike and having some summer fun on a mini bike is kind of a 70s. The idea of being in like a 12 o'clock boys gang that like wheelies mini bikes down like a central thoroughfare, that's a little more modern. But the, you know, just like sitting in your garage with three other fat stoners wrenching on a mini bike. That's really like 1978 vibe for me. And, you know, there was the entry form for the mini bike. Oh, the mini bike was named a Taco. The actual brand, you can look this up. Taco mini bikes. That's also very 70s. And then I found a free taco coupon from the actual 70s. And when I saw that, that activated a whole hologram in my brain of old Halloween, you know, 80s, 70s, like, the Halloween of my youth, because fast food was really intertwined with it back then. I don't know if maybe this is just an Albany Colony thing, but like when I was young, you might get you would not be unhappy if you got French fry coupons in your bag. It was totally normal. Like you would get maybe, I think there was like an ice cream one. There was a French fry one for all the major, you know.
Yeah. There, it was like a book you got.
Yeah.
It had coupons for all of the lower items on the menu before they had a dollar menu.
Right. And if you're a smart kid with an allowance, you go buy that book yourself. You just go buy 6 or 7 of those books, and then you get basically free fries the rest of the year because it was a lot cheaper than buying that amount of fries. And McDonald's, would put out bags that you could trick or treat with that had rules.
And buckets too.
And the buckets is the real deal because the buckets were like a pumpkin, a ghost, and a witch. And to me, that's the vibe of old Halloween. Pumpkin, ghost, witch, and maybe like a Dracula. And you're supposed to be prowling the streets with a Halloween-themed flashlight that adheres to the rules on your McDonald's bag. And like being safe, causing some trouble, but being safe because you have the bag to tell you. And then you go home and watch movies and cartoons that have been on for the last 10 years. Like Dark Knight of the Scarecrow and Worst Witch and shit. I feel like that's probably gone. Is there, you don't have any kids. I know that. I just have one now. She's not trick-or-treating yet. She's like barely even like alive yet. But I don't feel like Halloween is that way anymore.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I have a skewed view because I lived in the city for the past 10 years and they trick-or-treat there, but it's like a real casual thing. Like it happens at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you go around to like stores and stuff and it's not like a real thing. So I don't really know, but I feel like there's a way more Halloween related snacks now, but I don't think there's like this mystique with Halloween like it used to be.
Right. Like companies have jumped on Halloween.
Yeah.
But kids are shying away from it other than when they become, you know, 17 and start going to parties as, you know, sexy Master Shake from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That's the other, like when you go to, it's, I feel like the, I mean, maybe it really wasn't better, but I feel like back then, like the selection for that stuff was even better. Like you could go to a fucking drugstore and they would just have all the shitty because I think they were so cheap. They would have like all the plastic costumes all over the place. And now you just go to Target and they have a section, but it's like a lot of adult stupid costumes and just like real dumb kid costumes. There's no like, you can't, I don't think you can go to CVS and get like a Superman costume like you could back then.
Well, possibly inadvertently, Mike, you've landed on the only reason that I even brought this up, which is I'm going to send you something. Take a little time with this. You might have already seen this because I talk about this once in a while. This is basically the real reason I wanted to go down this path. I like old Halloween. I like watching the Paul Lind Halloween special on YouTube that has Kiss. I like that vibe. I like the idea of in the olden days, Halloween was almost like a blanket you pulled over yourself for a day. You just sunk into the darkness and went out and did some stuff, had a great time. You weren't going to die, probably. You were probably going to lose your hair because there was nair and piss in everybody's squirt gun. But you were unlikely to actually die. You could go out and have like what felt like dangerous suburban mayhem without, you know, like everybody felt like they're on equal terms. You know, it was not a big, and it was around election time. So everybody could pull the election signs up from the ground and start actually swinging on each other.
It was great, like a mini purge.
Yeah, it was a mini, exactly.
A little mini purge.
But so when I was a child, I'm not even sure what year this is because I didn't Google this part, but the most problematic costume in a long life of being problematic was the Kooky Spooks. I mean, I think the name is already a little bit, you know, we're already off to a bad start. But the Kooky Spooks, they were only out for maybe 2 years. And it was like this attempt to draw a best fit line between like what you said, the Ben Cooper drugstore plastic smock costumes where your face was Yoda and your chest also said, "Hey, I'm Yoda," like with an explosion.
Like it would be a Superman costume, but instead of a Superman, it would be like a T-shirt of Superman, like like a Superman comic or something.
Right. It would be a whole panel from the comics on your chest
instead of just Superman. The S.
So it was a cross between that and then some kind of like LSD mom's ambition for the holiday. You got the plastic smock, and then you got this enormous inflatable monster head, and it was real 70s, like almost like the hanker for a hunk of cheese guy. Or like the pamphlets you got at the nurse's office that warned you about viruses or something like that. And the packaging, it was not, you know, it's kind of like, it's sort of like a Robert Crumb or like a Grateful Dead poster, but more like the vegetable seed catalog that guy would have made in a spare time. it's a very 70s item. But the main thing, look this up, Kooky Spooks with a K, Kooky Spooks. Since you're already wearing another head, you cannot have your own head. And so they provided blackface. There's no denying it. The Kooky Spooks. Google it. There's absolutely no getting around it.
Do you legitimately remember this from your childhood?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like this was organic. Like later on, I was like, what the hell was with those like inflatable costumes that I, cause the head, it's a big like oval inflatable, you know, cheap 70s inflatable hat. Yeah. It's bigger than you. It's like, yeah. it's giant. It's like a beach ball that you're wearing on your head that is a creature. And that was the costume. The rest of it is just nonsense. You're just like the vehicle for this costume. I remember this and I was like, what was that thing? Because it's one of the few store-bought costumes I ever had. So I looked it up, you know, a few years ago. This happened for a couple years. I don't know if this is the reason why they pulled it. Sometimes it's orange face. Sometimes it's green face. But it's always black face. It's a straight up fucking problem, man. Like, and this was not at a time where nobody knew, you know, people were already starting to circle around this. Wait a minute stuff. No, I had this costume 2 years running. Wow. I can't believe it was true.
Yeah. I have no recollection of this or seeing, was there commercials?
I think it was a whole deal.
TV.
Yeah. This was a real deal. Like this is the real, this was an element of Halloween of this year. And you could find, you know, if you look in Google now, you'll see, look at images, and there's people who have unearthed a few and they're having fun with it, but none of them are wearing the makeup.
Is that makeup? I thought it was like an inflatable fetish mask.
Nope. That is grease paint that you get along with the
Holy
item.
Holy shit.
You're just supposed to put on, crazy. You're just supposed to go out into the night dressed like Al Jolson with a pool toy on your head, get candy. It's possible that my mom knew that she had fucked up, because after this I never got a store-bought costume. She would just find a couple of like dryer hoses and a box and some mascara, and she'd be like, yeah, you're like a vampire robot from Planet Punk.
I remember my first costume was a hobo, and I don't think I actually went out. I think my mom just like dressed me up as a hobo and was like, this is Halloween, and that kind of sucked. But so, yeah, but I liked, when I was little, I didn't know what a hobo was, but I liked that they carried a satchel or a sack, the rucksack, or whatever the fuck you call it. A bindle. That's what I'm looking for. I really liked that. I thought it was like, that's fucking amazing. You carry your beans in there. You're gone, man. You just live on the railroad tracks if you have that bindle.
So did you put like did you put like aspirational items into your bindle?
Well, I mean, it was a dream for me to like escape. Like, I can leave my family and I can be on my own. I just need the bindle, and luckily I was too young to know how to make one, so I never got to escape.
Hey man, if you figured out how to put like a Metro card and like a Swiss Army knife in there,
yeah,
60, 70 miles away from that place.
See, when I was like six, so it just didn't work out for me. So mine was, I misunderstood when you just said like old childhood fast food memories.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, this has nothing to do with Halloween. So this is a free story for you, but if you guys are longtime listeners of things I've been on, you probably know I have a huge aversion to vomit. The only things that bother me in life are vomit and shit. I am emotionless. I can watch somebody get decapitated right in front of me and I would not even flinch, but you do a little puke out of your mouth and I'm gonna fucking scream like a woman and run away. And it doesn't matter. It's like, it's weird because I know it's like a psychological thing, because like I was watching the Garbage Pail Kids documentary the other day, and I know they're showing the clip when the Garbage Pail Kid in the movie fucking pukes, and I know it's coming, and I'm just like, oh, whatever. And it happens, and I still have to turn away. So it's like...
Did like, your knees even start shaking together? Like, yeah, oh, like, oh, here it
comes. Even if I know it's coming and like I'm prepared, it's still... The only time it's not disgusting to me is when it's super cartoony, like the Garbage Pail Kids puke drawings, when they draw them on the cards. Right. I think that looks really cool. But
That's just like some Nickelodeon gag stuff. That's not.
So, and you know, deep down, I'm like, if I went to a psychologist or a therapist or whatever, they would be like, you know, there had to be like a childhood memory or something, you know, something deep down in your psyche that is causing this, because it's unnatural to be this afraid of vomit. So I've nailed it down. I'm pretty sure it was at a McDonald's Playland is what triggered it, because it's like the thing I like vividly remember. And I remember like hanging out with, like, at the time my mom had a roommate and her roommate had a kid, and I think we were like all hanging out, and for some reason my mom's roommate's kid was also like babysitting like a tiny baby, like that wasn't related to me or anything. And I just remember, or maybe it was like the
All bets were off back then, man. Yeah. It'd be anybody.
It might even been the fucking baby's birthday party, but either way, there's a fucking little baby there. And I just remember playing in Playland, and they were like at the table, and they were like, whoever was holding the baby is holding her, it, like, kind of like under the shoulder. So it's like, you know, dangling, like, in front of the person, like near the table. And I looked at that baby's face, and it just had like a blank expression. And vomit just came out of its mouth. And I think that was the first time I ever saw like a person or a thing vomit in real life.
Yeah.
And I think just like the soullessness of the vomit just did it for me for like the rest of my life. And that was at a McDonald's Playland. And you know, it's like one of my most vivid memories, unfortunately. So yeah, I think that's what did it for me for my puke aversion.
Do you still like think so when you... You know, you're 49 now. When you're 51 and you have your first baby, do you, you think you'll be able to harden up? Or
no,
still
dude. You know, because I have cats now, which are exactly like babies, but
they puke nonstop. Cats puke as a part.
They don't
of
puke, day. But like I said, I also have an aversion to shit, right. And like when they shit and I gotta take it out because it stinks too bad. Just like it is a fucking process for me, man. Like I have to like not look at it. I have to just like scoop it up real quick and like hold my face and go to the toilet and throw it in there. And just like, it is like a thing. And I'm like all worked up, like I'm panicky after it. And I gotta, you know, do that. Luckily, my girlfriend is a sweetheart and she does it most of the time. But when I do it, like, so at least once a week, I have like almost a panic attack from just cleaning up a cat shit. So I don't think I could ever have a baby. I would have to get a fucking nanny for it immediately.
I don't I always worry about that. Like half of this show is me sharing like youth stories, yeah. And I'm gonna run out. I don't have anything to talk about anymore. But many years ago, I lived with a listener. Sorry to that listener and a non-listener who are both still friends of mine. And they used to go to war over the maintenance of certain items by not cleaning them acutely. So when they decided they weren't gonna wash dishes because like you know you dirtied this dish, I'm not gonna wash it.
Yeah,
they started just stockpiling the dishes in Rubbermaid bins and not washing them anymore. they were my dishes. so people were using but not washing my dishes. So the non-listener roommate, he had cats. He just took in these cats, Bill and Bob, Buffalo Bill and Wild Bill, Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bob. Sorry, one of them is still alive now. This is like 30 years ago. One of them still alive. So he brought in these cats. And there's more to this story. Like I could do pets with as a separate podcast. But he just didn't want to clean up after the cats. So he just keep putting out new litter boxes with new litter.
What the fuck?
And leaving the old ones. And then he was like, well, wait a minute. Volume is the answer here. So he started putting out full, like the 32-gallon Rubbermaid bins full of litter.
Oh, God, dude.
And just letting the cats use that and just, and it got to, it just was like, all of a sudden there was just this whole, there was like a garage attached to the building and that the cats would use. And it was just filled with
Jesus
different
Christ.
Increasingly sized containers of, by the end he had to have been spending $600 on litter to fill.
Wow, that's something, man.
That's not even the worst thing that happened to me when I lived there. So we have a new segment.
New segment.
And this one is going to fly or die. You know, it's an idea I had. I want to do it anyway. I want to just do this because I think it's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Like Mike and I, we want to go back. We want to attempt to fill in some of the gaps in our knowledge of the music genres we grew up on. I'm provisionally calling this All Holes Filled.
Yeah.
I think it works, but I mean, the reason I want to do this is legit because, you know, the current internet of music, we talked about this earlier, but the current internet of music is about knowing everything instantly. The minute that you discover a genre, you're supposed to absorb it and be like conversant, expert, master of that genre immediately. And I never did any of that shit. Would you say that you were like, were you like a studious consumer of the stuff that you like? And did you actually make an effort to absorb the shit that you didn't like because it was seminal?
Well, I mean, we have to take into consideration we're from a different generation where right. You couldn't.
Money was involved.
Yeah, there's money involved. You couldn't like discover a band and like them and be like, I want to listen to their other six albums right now. Right. Like you couldn't do that back then. So you had to make conscious decisions to be like, oh, my, you know, my allowance or whatever, my shitty job at Taco Bell, for instance, does not support me buying this $18 album right now. So it's got to right. wait. And unfortunately, sometimes it waits until you're almost 57 years old.
See, we're close to retirement age.
Yeah.
And we're just discovering hardcore now. So I'm hoping there's some venues that'll let us in. But yeah, like that's the deal. It's that there was money, there was mail order, there was like, but you know, but some people did it anyway. Some people, once they're like, well, I'm into punk now, I need to go listen to like the Ramones and the, you know, I need to go yeah. like do all the homework and be like able to back up the back patches on my battle jacket or something like yeah. that. And I just yeah. never did. I never did that. I never
yeah, when I was younger. Shit. Yeah. When I was younger that age, I was in the '90s and I was into, what was referred to as moshcore back then.
Yeah.
Which is just like fucking Drop D, you know, Earth Crisis, Snapcase, shit like that. Just moshy moshcore. So if I got wind that a band, like one of the bands we're going to talk about today mm-hmm. was, not moshcore, I did not give a fuck. Like, it took me so long to listen to the Cro-Mags because I didn't know. I was like, I don't know if they have fucking breakdowns. Like, I don't know that their name's the Cro-Mags. That doesn't sound like a band that has breakdowns right. to me.
It was intimidating. There might yeah. not be breakdowns on this record.
Yeah, like, even the first time I heard Integrity, I was like, this band has been built up in my head for so long, and they have
It's got to be coming. Yeah.
They have Misha. They have one song that's just basically one long breakdown.
Yeah.
And then a lot of their other shit, no breakdowns.
Have you ever listened to that Traitors MP3 that I flog around the internet once in a while?
Traitors.
It's newer. There's a band called Traitors. Listeners, please look up a song called Dead Nerves by Traitors. It just keeps breaking down. It's the dumbest song. I love it. You know, like I'm getting to a weird place in life now because, like I said, you know, AARP, it's yeah. they send me mail. But this song Traitors, I think it's from like 2013. It's a little older, but it just keeps breaking down. And just when you're like, wow, this is as broken down as a song could get, they do another breakdown. It's fantastic. Anyway. So I'm on a different track from that because, you know, when I was young, I was taking up instruments. And when I took up instruments, all I wanted to do was play. You know, so I was a metal kid, but I was also kind of into hardcore, but I mean, I only liked what I liked because I didn't have the money to be buying. I didn't have the money to be checking out Cro-Mags. I was like borrowing stuff from my one hardcore friend and he didn't have anything. So I like Breakdown. I have a Breakdown 7-inch. And then from there on, you know, nobody was making friends with me because I have a Merrill 7-inch or an Iconoclast 7-inch. That wasn't happening. You know, and I didn't really dig genres because there was no way to do that back then. You just, like, you liked whatever record you bought that month.
Yeah.
And it could be, like, because I didn't mess with them. Everybody else was getting the Very Distro catalog or whatever, and they were, you know, buying weird things. I didn't do that. I was weird about mail order. I was scared of it, and I didn't want to put money in the mail. I didn't know what happened. I had a checking account. I'm like 9. Who has money like that? Even when I was now I'm 60. I don't have a checking account. I'm not going to put a check in the mail. So, I mean, I just liked the things I liked and I wanted to play music more than I wanted to listen to music. Like the first time I heard Neurosis, I wanted to start putting Neurosis parts in my ska metal bands music. It's like, that was my move. It's like, I heard it. Oh, that's cool. I want to start playing that.
Yeah.
So that's the point of this, is that we both of us listen to a couple of podcasts and know a few people who are very quick with information. I'm jealous of that. If it takes me the next 40 years, I want to be that guy. in every genre that I have ever interacted with in my life, I'll go first. We'll see what happens. Okay. I think we're both on this one. So first of all, did you already have knowledge of the record that I listened to.
Yeah, this is a band. It was one of the first bands I heard when I initially discovered hardcore music, who was through my friend Jay, mm-hmm. who not Jay from Bunk Hockey, but a different Jay. And when I started going to school, this is a long story, but basically I went to a school. I was like a rap kid. He was a metal kid. And he was like, oh, if you like rap music, you probably like music with drum machines. So I'm going to make you a tape of this band called Godflesh, which is, you know, not the biggest jump from rap to, like, it's not a clean jump. Right. It's no Biohazard, basically. And I think that's what basically, you know, hooked me in with stuff like Biohazard. Because I was like, this is kind of like, it has a groove to it, you know. It's kind of like hip hop in a way.
This sounds like Godflesh.
Long story short, basically, like, he had an older brother that got him into this, so he's like, these are all my older brother's tapes. And it was like Scott said, it wasn't like by genre. It was like, you know, fucking Godflesh music. It was fucking old school death metal. Black metal wasn't really a thing yet, but it was like regular metal and like punk hardcore, breakdown hardcore. It was like everything. And so yeah, basically this band that Scott's going to discuss, it was one of the first things I heard. And I didn't really like it. I thought it was okay.
Like, that's sort of the one of the pivotal things. I'm going to take a digression. Maybe I'll just edit this out later. I don't know. But Godflesh is a good point of reference because, when I was younger, I already liked Godflesh. I thought that name was cool. I bought Street Cleaner. Street Cleaner's friggin' awesome. And I played it for my friend who was like, I don't know. He was like, he should have been in Whitesnake, but he was, you know, 14. You know, he wore open blouses to school. And he had, he had the full stack amp in his house, and he shredded. He was great. And I played him Godflesh, and he didn't like it. And he was like, sounds kind of programmed. I don't feel like this. And then he just reached under his bed. He goes, I don't feel like that, like program music. Maybe you'll like this. And he hands me Ministry of Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste. Perfect. I love that album too. Like, you know, it hit me at the right time. And that, we'll talk about that some other day. But, you know, one of the things that really, like, stung me when I was a little – I was younger than I am now, but not young. I was at my – I have a friend who's now famous for industrial noise music, but he wasn't at the time. And he was playing, like, a terrible show at our mutual friend's art space.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an art space, and, like, this guy, he was playing a noise show, and the opener – I'm going to put him on blast. Maybe I'll get knifed for this someday. I don't know. There's a noise industrial artist named Theologian. I think he's performed under a lot of different names, but this night he was Theologian, and he would not remember me. This would not have made a dent in his life whatsoever. And, you know, it's possible that that I misconstrued this whole event, but let's run with my version. Let's just run with my version. I think he's a name brand. I think he's like a guy. So this is it. I'm risking my actual organs. And I started trying to, and he was, somehow Godflesh came up, and I'm trying to talk to him about it. And he just started big timing me because he knew everything about Justin, like hard. And he knew everything about Justin Broadrick's, you know, rap stuff and his like noise stuff and his, you know, Jesu, I don't think was even the real thing by then, but he was just curb stomping me on everything I said. And I was like, man, like, I'm not equipped for this. I just like the band. I don't know what to, I got to walk away from this. Or it was just a real garbage moment. And it set the stage for me noticing that in my entire life, I never paid attention to nothing. I don't, you know, if we have friends who can name the label and the city and the members and can tell you, you know, what festival they caused a riot at by punching a woman or whatever, like they remember all the stories. None of that is in me.
I was even an active member of the early hardcore internet, you know, alt music hardcore on Usenet, where I was like reading about, you know, Sean McKay from Ink and Dagger throwing yogurt at Earth Crisis, but it just, most of it didn't really sink in. So, you know, that's what I'm going for now. So, you know, after all these years, and I even own a CD, it's in one of these cases behind me that hasn't been opened in 12 years. Judge, bringing it down. Everybody should have heard this by now. We have a mutual, I'll call him an acquaintance because I don't think he likes either of us enough to be friend. our friend Scott, he's like a huge Judge fan. He has a bunch of tattoos. And of course, because I listened to this in the first 3 seconds, there's a bunch of bassline bullshit. You know, they're doing the thing where they go, wah, wah, and the bass is going, doo, 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 doo. Nobody asked you to do that. Of course, our friend Scott likes that.
Yeah.
I play bass too, Scott. But, you know, so I'm listening to this thing. And, you know, first of all, like, the metallic parts of it are reasonable. And I only point that out because it comes from a time when everybody in hardcore was calling things metal. They were misinterpreting what actually made something metallic. Like, basically, if the guitarist went past the seventh fret anywhere on his guitar,
yeah,
all he had to do was go up there and hit a chord, and that was like he was playing, like he was shredding. But that was like an epidemic back then, was saying, like, oh, this sounds like Slayer. When, like the first Firestorm by Earth Crisis. Everyone said it was like Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I've owned a guitar for a week, and this is me trying to write a Slayer riff. That's Firestorm. I like Firestorm retroactively. I didn't at the time, but I like it now. But it's not Chemical Warfare. It's not, you know, Seasons in the Abyss. It's not Slayer. So on this album, the guitarist is Porcel.
Yep.
And I have to just keep talking because we can't talk about Porcel. Because Porcel is now, like, I don't know if he still is, but for a while he was a local to the Capital District, yeah. And he started forming bands with our friends. And they're all terrible. Yeah. Everything about it is terrible. Yes. And then he started touring with Bold, and that's terrible. You know, so the first thing I wondered was, I'm listening to this album, I'm like, what is up with this sound? So I looked it up, and first of all, you know, he played it through a Les Paul, a black Les Paul. No problem. That's a fine guitar. He plugged it into two JCM 800 Marshall amps. Still going good. Like, those are classics from everybody from Van Halen to Entombed. Double fine. No problem. Where he says he got his sound was that he plugged a TC Electronics distortion pedal in between those two otherwise classic items. So what I want you to imagine is that you've spent like $17,000 on a tuba, the greatest tuba on earth, and you're playing it to like a 6,000 person audience, and you put a Dixie cup between your mouth and the tuba. That's what he did. And you can hear it. Like, if you actually listen, like, put on earbuds, and it just sounds like it sounds like an actual, like a bunch of flies battering around in some wax paper. So that part is bad, but this album was a good choice because it was way, way more interesting to listen to than I expected. Would this have been an album that you would have had and owned and listened to when you were younger?
No, before I reveal that it was the band, the first Judge I heard was their last 7-inch at the time, which was their quote unquote metal album, which was, again, you know, very lightly metal. Like, it's very vaguely metal. And, I liked There Will Be Quiet After the Storm. Like, I like that song. And then when I went back and heard the Judge before that, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I mean, it's not like the other Judge is so much more metal, but it was metal enough for me where I didn't like, initially, I didn't like Judge. When I got older, I could appreciate him. I could understand when I had like a better knowledge of hardcore, basically.
Yeah. Time is the weapon.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like something now, give it 10 years and try again, because you'll probably like it then. Time is the weapon that makes metalcore awesome. Although the word metalcore wasn't really around back then, we called it metallic hardcore. That's what they would have called this back. They would call it metallic hardcore because metalcore wasn't really a word yet. At the time, I would have looked at this as something that just was too basic and not up to par with like Dark Angel. I don't think I would have been wrong, but it's way better than I thought. I don't like, but don't love Mike Judge's vocals.
Yeah.
Like, to me, so I listened to this thing in 2018, and I hear someone, a human being, trying to get close to Dwid.
Yeah.
And I know Mike Judge came first. I get that. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm looking at it now. All it meant, like, I like the vocals because it sounds like a person trying to sound like Dwid, and a normal person can't sound like Dwid. Yeah. I don't know what's up with Dwid. Like, he's he's changed in a lot of ways, but his voice is still really something. It's really like a force to be reckoned with. And, like, I hear songs on this that sound like that to me. And then there's, you know, these occasionally like layered gang vocals that I wasn't expecting. Those are pretty cool. They're all kind of messy, almost like some sort of dead guy thing or something like that. That's sweet. And I know nobody else is really going to hear it like that, you know, because I'm approaching this from a different point of view, but like, I'm trying. And, you know, in this time, if you had bought this record back then, if you were a kid, and you bought this record, that you were broke and you weren't on that Columbia 10 albums for a penny dick,
You know, you had to listen to the hell out of anything that you bought. And this would have been totally fine for me because it's pretty varied. I wasn't expecting the variety. Like, if you listen to this now, fresh ears, first song is like the epic mosh song, you know? It's like got all the big ring out parts. Then there's a bunch of like really fast songs.
Yeah.
Like surprisingly fast. There's like, you know, Hold Me Back and Hear Me and a couple other ones. They have these like super sweet, like almost grind fast parts. And then they go to the song The Storm, and it's this awesome dirge.
Yeah.
It's like a 45-minute dirge. It just keeps going, and it just keeps yelling. And I was not expecting any of that. I just wasn't expecting every track to have its own personality from the band Judge.
Yeah.
Whose logo is two hammers crossed. You know, and there's cool parts here and there. Like, there's cool things. There's things, like, if you just listen to it out of nowhere, there's things you'll remember. Like, oh, man, that's neat. That's, like, a hard part. You know, there's, like...
Yeah.
A part at the end of Hold Me Back where he goes like, and never change a thing.
Yeah.
That's a good part. I'll probably remember that. Bringing It Down, the song, has incidents where he names the band Judge.
Yes.
As an entity who are out in the streets using hammers to bring equality to the nation. Like, according to the lyrics.
Yeah.
I don't know who he's hitting. Apparently drug dealers or whatever.
Well, the whole thing was between this one and the first 7-inch was that they used to be known as like this violent problem in the scene. And the second one was, I think Bringing It Down is like Mike Judge trying to stop that, to clean up that image. Or maybe that was the third one. I can't remember. I haven't watched that documentary in a while.
The documentary is pretty cool. If you go on Noisy, there's, like, I didn't know this, but trying to listen to the album on YouTube in peace. And there's a Noisy doc in my related videos, of course, because there's a Noisy doc for everything now. But there's a whole Noisy doc on there about this. And, you know, I let it play in the background. I need to focus on it. I need to watch it again because it just seemed like Mike Judge talking about being abused and like how hardcore is awesome and made him like a strong man.
Yeah.
The whole thing can't be that. But as far as I could tell, the whole thing was about Mike Judge becoming a strong man from hardcore. No, I didn't get to part three yet, but does he talk about Old Smoke?
I can't remember. I think he might quickly talk about Old Smoke.
So something I didn't realize until very recently. The band Old Smoke. Mike Judge came back out of nowhere, and I think he's still maybe out of contract with Revelation or something like that, because he got to put out an album called Mike Judge and Old Smoke that's like...
That's whatever. Very bad.
It's bad. I had thought all the way up until maybe a month ago that it was called Onion and Old Smoke. Because there's a band called Onion that was like in the same, they're from Connecticut. Maybe you know them. There was a band called Onion who was like a hardcore band kind of in the same era. They must have been on like a mailing list or something like that. And I just saw Onion, Old Smoke, and that was like Mike Judge, Onion, and Old Smoke. But anyway, so that's it. I filled the hole of Judge. I'm happy with it. I don't know if I listen to it again, but I'm happy that I listened to it. Like, I'm not disappointed. It's better than I thought. I'm going to pretend as though I heard it when I was 18.
And now you can't.
That was foundational. And it's why I went straight edge. Because, by the way, I was straight edge till I was 30.
Yeah.
Because of Judge. Because of Judge. Because
of Judge. Before I get into mine, I will say, listening back to this, it just made me think about how hardcore is one of the dumber genres of music. Because it's crazy that people have been trying to chase this sound since this sound came out. And like,
yeah.
It's the only music genre that really does that is happy and not evolving, basically.
And I think that's kind of the shadow that's cast over it, is that I've heard a lot of the stuff since. And a lot of the stuff since then sucks and is what I thought.
Yeah, and my logic always when it comes to hardcore is like, oh, that band copied that band, so they have to be better, because it's like,
right,
that other band's fucking super old, so, yeah. You know, in my mind, like, no one in hardcore, I mean, it's kind of true, but no one in hardcore really knew how to play instruments until, like, the late 90s.
Until the band that Mike and I were in at War with Shadows.
That's the first band that played instruments. Now, I think Coalesce was, like, maybe the first band where I was like, man, like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is going on right now?
Yeah.
There's
a lot up till that point where I think there's, like, shredders behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Coalesce was and Botch maybe were the first bands to come out and say, hey, we're super good at math. And,
yeah, it was like really like I was like in my head for Coalesce. I was just like, well, they're from Missouri. There's nothing to do there. So they probably just fucking practice all day.
Yeah,
they probably did. So mine is I figured this is the first, you know, make it or break it segment. for all holes filled. And I was like, I should at least, because, you know, maybe 30% of our audience is familiar with Judge, maybe more, I don't know. So I decided to do something everybody's familiar right. with and something everybody could be upset with me about. And it's rap music. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up as a quote-unquote rap kid, a rap head, maybe a hip-hop head. I never really listened to any other music growing up until high school and Godflesh. That was my... Mm-hmm. Actually, no, there was a quick like year when I was 9 where I was really into glam rock, like glam metal and glam rock and stuff like that. Because it's just because it was on MTV.
Wait, what kind of glam rock?
Just like, I really like Poison and just stuff like that. That was because it was on TV. And then like, you know, Guns N' Roses. It was just like access to MTV and basically all the shit they played. It wasn't like I was digging deep for this shit or anything like that. But then I moved back to a city and I was like, oh, no one listens to this stuff here. So I'm back into rap music. So a person I've disliked for most of basically his whole career is a person named Tupac. So
Tupac Shakur.
So there's very few Tupac records where I've sat through a front to back of. And All Eyes on Me, I think, is his classic, quote-unquote classic double album, but it's 2 hours and some minutes long, and I wasn't going to sit there and listen to this shit for two some hours, so I...
I couldn't believe that shit when you told me that. You're like, oh, it's two... What? Are you talking about a movie? Are you talking about, like...
Yeah, dude. I don't know why you would ever do that to somebody.
Belly? Are we talking about Belly?
But I listened to the Machiavelli... Columinati, the 7-day theory. This was some weird fake concept album that Tupac did or something, where he wasn't pretending to be anybody else. He calls himself Tupac on this, but I don't know. There was some mysterious reason that this was under Machiavelli. Who fucking knows? Who cares? Mm-hmm. Just the backstory, I've obviously heard Tupac a bunch of times, and I don't like him for two reasons, and one reason is, you know, it's valid. The other reason is probably why people like him. It's kind of just like people like Pantera, and I don't think Scott or I like Pantera, and I understand why people like him, but...
That's going to be episode 30.
Yeah. Or he's going to do a whole Pantera discography. No, and one of the reasons I don't like him is because he was the first rapper I ever, like... He's basically the first rapper where I realized, like, rap wasn't real. Where I was like, oh, this guy is, like, obviously fake. Like, he is not what he says he is. He, like, you know, he was an actor and, like, you know, like a goofy rapper. And then 2 years later, he's this hard man from, like, Compton or whatever. And it's just like, this is fake. Like, he's not. Why do people believe this? And everybody's like, oh, he's such a bad boy. And it's like, he's not. Just go watch a video from 2 years ago. He was in the fucking Digital Underground doing goofy shit. And, like, he had a rap career where he wasn't a hard man gangbanger. Why do people believe this? So it was just like, fuck this guy. Well, I will say Juice is one of my favorite movies of all time, and he's the lead in that, basically, or the co-lead, and, you know, I love him in that, but I don't mind his movies, but fucking rapping, I'm just like, this guy's like the fakest dude. And the other reason is why I do think people like him, but why I don't like him, and it's because he's one of the only rappers, and that's why he's so singular, that sounds like he might have taken some poetry classes. Like, everything, like, he never says anything super clever, where you're just like, whoa. But everything he says is very poetic, and, like, you could tell he paid attention in poetry classes in school. He has this down. And I always thought he sounded way too poetic. His cadence is basically Scarface's cadence from Ghetto Boys, and I like Scarface way more than Tupac. So I just, like, I was always just annoyed with this dude, basically. So, yeah, I didn't like this record still. Time was not good to this. It was 1996. It's just, like, I was kind of surprised about how bad the production was, like, both sonically and just, like, choice of music and stuff. It's just, like, it sounds so cheap. It's just, it's pretty bad. It's not great. I don't know. Like, I don't know to say it wasn't good. The features on it were bad. There's, his boys, the Outlaws, who was, like Biggie. Shit,
with a Z?
I think it was with a Z, because Biggie had Junior Mafia, and then Tupac had the Outlaws, and they were just, like, uncharismatic guys. I don't know. I don't know where these people
are. Brothers-in-law.
Yeah.
Cousins.
Yeah, it was just, like, real bad. And I think that was, like, kind of a thing for a while, is, like, you would have your crew that was definitely not as good as you for some reason. Like, I don't know. It's just a very strange time in rap.
They give them whole tracks, too. Like, I'm not...
I'm not the guy for rap. I like rap now, retroactively. When I was a kid, I was coming off of some other stuff, and it wasn't really my thing. But when I was much younger, I really, really liked the ODB album that I can't say the name of.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there's a whole track on there where he just lets his guys do a completely, it's a very bizarre, like, acid trip of an album. And then he just gives his guys a track or two. Yeah. And they just do like a totally normal, shitty, garbage, local struggle rap song in the middle of this, like, fever dream.
Yeah, I never understood it. I don't even think Brooklyn Zoo ever even, that was his crew. I don't even think they ever even had a record. Like, there's just stuff like that that happened for some reason. So, I don't know. I don't know what the game plan was there, but that was a thing. Hail Mary, which is maybe the best song on here. There's like a few that I would say are like listenable songs where I'm just like, yeah, I guess this is okay. I looked up, there's a few, listen to this on Spotify, there's no credits as to the mm-hmm. other people in the song, but on this song, there's a semi-Jamaican sounding guy at the end. His name is Prince Ital Joe. I don't know if it's Prince Ital Joe, I don't know. Either way,
Ital.
Yeah. He played a bit part in the movie Marked for Death, which was a Steven Seagal movie where he fought Screwface. But more importantly, when I was looking this up, he has a whole entire record with Mark Wahlberg, a.k.a. Marky Mark. It was Marky Mark's, like, third record. It's just him and this guy. This is, like, erased from the internet. Like, there is one choppy video, and I think that's all you could find. Like, I might have to look this up on Discogs and rip it and put it on the internet. Because the fact that Marky Mark has an entire vaguely reggae record, or vaguely dancehall record, is something I need to listen to.
It doesn't come up often.
No. And this also has the same tropes, the Tupac tropes that I've always hated, which is like, oh no, he's this hard man, but here's also this very socially conscious song for some reason from this hard man that fucking hates society and everything. And it's just like, when you boil it down, this is just like typical like pop record kind of like track transitions. Like, it's the hard song and then it's the sex song and then it's the socially conscious song. Nowadays, modern rap is not thing I like too much. Like, I like stuff, I still stay stay current stuff, but they just mix everything in one song now. It's just like every subject is in one song. Somebody's blowing this guy, he's shooting this guy, he's saving the hood, he's just doing everything. And that's like back,
but the title with the title of whatever it is will be really awesome.
I think every single rap song is about getting blown these days. It's just like every single one, somebody's getting blown.
It's really the most important thing.
I understand why they say it so much. That's about it. The only thing else I would say is To Live and Die in LA made me realize that we're getting close to where mid to late 90s rap even is kind of just like starting to kind of show its cracks, where it's just like it's kind of like when you revisit something from the 70s or 80s and you're just like, it was a different time. Like you know, you listen to a song and you're just like, some goofy disco song, and you're just like, I guess, like that Duck song, like the Disco Duck, or like the Ohio Players Funky Worm, which, you know, is a very famous sample that everybody remembers from rap music. And but you listen to like the words to that song, you're just like, this is the dumbest fucking song ever, and shit like that existed. And that's how I feel about, like, I know Tupac is supposed to be this poetic master, but To Live and Die in LA has like a horrible, almost cringeworthy chorus. It's just like horribly song, it's like everything about it's bad. And I don't think this is like a classic record, but this is definitely a record people hold in high regard. And just like listening to it with modern ears is like, man, I can't believe what flew back then and people thought this was super good. So I did not like this. Basically, it just did not win me over Tupac. I think next, if we do this again, I'll probably have a little less mainstream pick, but I just wanted to get this off my chest that for the reasons I don't like Tupac.
So 1996, though. So here's a theory I have. Like this, I think we've talked about something like this before, offline, or you know, off in the 20 years before Border Boss. I think I might be stepping in some shit. I might be like really walking into some sketchy territory when I say this, but I think that rap is fundamentally different from rock, because you know, rock builds slowly on the shoulders of the last thing, you know? And I think rap, builds so extremely, it's almost like the iPhone 1 versus the iPhone 10.
I mean, for the most, yeah, it's kind of crazy because it's like I enjoy things for different reasons, and I think there's still a good chunk of 90s rap that you could play in like a contemporary situation, and it's not, you know, it's not weird. Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, it is kind of like, in a way, it's kind of weird. Like, there's places like also across the street from me, besides the Taco Bell, is a kind of like a college friendly ramen place, and it's like a chain here called Furious Spoon, and it's kind of shitty. Mm-hmm. And their whole deal is like, you know, they're a funky ramen place, and they also play 90s rap music inside of it. And in that sense, when I hear it, I just cringe. I'm just like, this is the worst gimmick ever. I don't know why you would do this, but you know, there's stuff I could listen to and enjoy. But I think the big difference between rap and rock music is that rap music completely evolves and changes when the equipment and technology changes. Right. And so that's kind of why, like, I can listen to Wu-Tang Clan and be like, I really like this because even at the time, the equipment he used was, like, really antiquated. So, like, this is, like, a sound that no one could ever get again because it doesn't exist anymore. So in that sense, it's really cool.
Even, like, one song can change the genre overnight.
That's another thing about rap music that's different than any other genre is, like, I wouldn't say being a copycat is encouraged, but mostly if something hits, everybody's going
to
try it.
Yeah. Even down to the voice.
Yeah.
Like if you come out and your voice is nasal and it hits, the next 10 things, the next 100 things that come out, even the whole next genre that comes out is all going to be nasal rapping, which is happening now.
Yeah.
So anyway, Border Boss listeners should get to their social media outlets of choice and let me know whether you care that we are finally discovering 20 to 30 year old records that everybody has heard by now.
We're going to do it, and you're going to fucking listen to
it. You're going to fucking listen to
it? We're going to start a micro podcast inside of this podcast. Then you'll have no choice.
Border Boss and Friends!